color of a man's skin is of no more significance.
I said before I get out of here, I just want enough respect to each and everyone who call in, and I say don't tune into the positive vibe on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm gonna leave you with this tune. It's gonna go next week, same place, same time. You know, say it, you know, say you have God in your heart, good over evil. I see it. When you have love in your heart, nothing can stop even God's show. Just keep on praying. Reach out to JR and Toronto and pick up safe, girl.
Take a moment and I think how much I'm blessed. I'm at peace.
That's what I'm going to tell some boys. I'm blessed. And I see it every time I'm going. And where I go.
As I give you thanks and praise for another day. It's only you could have taken me through. I owe it all to you. I know it's only you. Only you could have carried me through now. I owe it all to you. I know it's only you. When the thoughts of losing hope arise, I close my eyes and above the waves I ride. The rainbow tells me there is no reason to cry. Promise, hope, and faith, these colors signify. And only you could have taken me through. I owe it all to you. Yeah, I know it's only you.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You're listening to CQUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial, and www.cqut.ca online.
You are listening to The Prison Radio Show. My name is Candace.
And my name is Virginia.
And we're your hosts for today's show. Today we'll be joined live on the phone by Howie, who is one of the people supporting Zolo Azania. We will also be airing an interview done by Prison Radio folks in Kingston, Ontario. The interview is with two women who are campaigning for the creation of a memorial to women who have died in prison in Canada. But up first, some news items. Haitians crossing into the United States via the Mexican border will end up in private prisons under a new federal government plan under Obama. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security plans to buy new immigration detention space in four locales in Youngstown, Ohio, Cibola County, New Mexico, Aurora, Colorado, and Robstown, Texas. They're anticipating an influx of undocumented immigrants, which, according to the Wall Street Journal, more than 5,000 Haitians have reached the Mexican border to try to cross into U.S. ports of entry. The private prisons are owned by CoreCivic, formerly known as Corrections Corporation of America.
Canada's prison watchdog is raising red flags about the overuse of pepper spray in federal penitentiaries. Correctional investigator Howard Sapers and his office tabled their annual report in Parliament on Monday, October 31st, and found that the use of pepper spray has tripled in a five-year period with little accountability. The annual report stated that pepper spray was used in 60% of the more than 1,800 use of force incidents in the last year. The correctional investigator partly blamed the increase on a policy change that was done back in September 2010 that allowed correctional officers to carry pepper spray canisters on their belts. Before then, the chemical, which makes it hard to breathe and see, was locked up. His report notes that there hasn't been a correlating increase in the severity of security incidents or threats to justify the increased use of pepper spray.
Until this year, New Brunswick wasn't keeping track of the number of prisoners being sent to isolation inside its provincial jails each month. A new tracking process went into effect in January. It turns out that more than 300 provincial inmates were sent to isolation in the first 6 months of this year, according to figures from that new tracking system, figures obtained by CBC News through an access to information request. Meanwhile, the federal penitentiary in Renouse, New Brunswick, holds the highest average length of segregation in the country. The average number of days federal inmates may spend in solitary at the Atlantic Institute is 51 days, compared with 27 days at Port-Cartier Institution in Quebec, which is also a maximum security prison. This is still the Prison Radio Show here on CKUT. Stay tuned. Next, we're going to be hearing an interview with Howie.
Culture Shock 2016, Into the Spotlight, November 10th to 13th. Join Cupert McGill and SSMU for an event series about anti-racism, migrant justice, and Indigenous solidarity. Featuring All Hands on Deck, a keynote presentation and performance by artist and Black Lives Matter activist Damon Davis. Heavy Vetting, a night of Fat Cutie BIPOC performances. Also, please join us for workshops such as Anti-Racism 101, Breaking Things Down, Indigenous Perspectives, History and Solidarity, Cut and Paste, a Black and Muslim Girl Zine-Making Workshop, and Transmigration, a Roundtable. All events are wheelchair accessible and scent free. Child care and whisper translation is available upon request. More information is available at cultureshockseries.com. Culture Shock 2016, Into the Spotlight. A CKUT co-presentation.
Mundial Montreal is a four-day celebration of music from around the world, showcasing some of the hottest talent emerging from Canada and beyond. Friday, November 18th at La Nationale, Nuit d'Afrique presents, in collaboration with Mundial Montreal and CKUT, a night of dancing featuring two of the hottest acts from Latin America. The night begins with the superheated Son Jarocho sound of Las Cafeteras and will end with a performance by new cumbia queen La Yegros. Treat yourself to a trip around the world without leaving the city. For scheduled tickets and more, visit mundialmontreal.com.
Hi, Howie.
Hello.
Hello. So up next, we will be doing an interview about political prisoner and former death row inmate Zolo Agona Azania. Zolo will finally be released from prison in a few short months in February 2017 after spending 35 years in prison and 27 years on death row. Zolo is a prolific writer and an accomplished artist. His writings and art reflect his deep commitment to the Black freedom struggle and a just world for all people. And today we have live on the phone with us Howie, who's one of Zolo's supporters, who's coordinating a campaign to raise money for Zolo once he's released. So hi again. Welcome to the Prison Radio Show.
Hi. Thanks a lot for having me.
I'm wondering if we can first start off talking about the fundraiser. Can you tell us a bit about this fundraiser that folks are coordinating in order to help Zolo rebuild his life once he gets out of prison?
Absolutely. As you said, in a few short months in February, Zolo will be released and his life will change completely, dramatically. As you said, he's been in prison for 35 years. So we're doing a lot to try to prepare the ground for him so that, you know, to ease his transition to the outside. And an important part of that is he needs money. You know, he has practically no money. I'm sure people who follow prison issues have seen in the U.S., perhaps in Canada as well. In the U.S. recently, there were strikes in many prisons over the conditions of labor, very low pay, a privatization of labor in prisons, and Zolo has suffered that. He will leave prison practically penniless. So we have initiated a GoFundMe, and I'm happy to say we already have almost $3,000 collected, donated, I should say, and our goal is $10,000, and we have $3,000 donated, and only 30 people have donated so far, so people are being very generous. And however, I'm realistic. I don't want to overstate the success. At this point, we don't have that much money, and I really encourage anyone that's listening to please donate.
On the page for the fundraiser, it mentions that Zolo is a jailhouse lawyer, an artist, and a writer. Can you tell folks who haven't heard about him a little bit more about him and his time inside?
Sure, but I realize I didn't really give any information about how to donate, so let me do that first. If folks go on Facebook to Chicago Committee to Free Black Political Prisoners, I'll say it again, Chicago Committee to Free Black Political Prisoners, you will see there that the GoFundMe page has been shared to that Facebook page, and you'll be able to donate in that way. Or you can just Google or DuckDuckGo, you know, you can search for GoFundMe/HelpZoloRebuildHisLife. Again, GoFundMe/HelpZoloRebuildHisLife. So you can search on Google or whatever search engine and find it that way too. So I hope people can donate. His time inside. Zolo is an amazing person. Again, as you said, Virginia, he's an amazing painter. Actually, we've had art exhibits with his art and other death row inmates. As you said, Zolo was on death row for 27 years. He came off death row in 2008. So before 2008, we had an exhibit of his amazing paintings. He has one of Emmett Till, you know, the boy who was tortured and murdered in the South in the early 1960s. His paintings express who he is. He's a committed black revolutionary. That's who he is. He believes in complete black freedom. And he, even though he's inside, in answer to your question, even though he's inside, he's just got an amazing spirit. It's, you know, I and others visit him, and we just can't believe his optimism, he's a bright, thinking, vibrant individual. He keeps in touch with people on the outside. He's very active from inside prison, painting, writing, And in addition to those things, he's achieved a paralegal certificate. He's done a lot to help himself legally and to help others, other prisoners legally. He's completed 2 years of college courses. You know, that's all the good stuff. Of course, prison is very hard. And during this last year, we fought for him to get work release. That's what prisoners in the state of Indiana in the U.S. Are entitled to. Only some get it, of course. Zola wanted work release, which is where you are in a much less secure facility and you go out every day to work, to a real job, and then you come back. Well, we put up a big fight. Lots of letters were sent in to the prison authorities. We actually were able to have a meeting because of the help of a state of Indiana representative, a black man named Charlie Brown. 10 of us actually met with the heads of the Indiana State Prison, and they did offer Zola work, although not work release. Because Zola was convicted of murder and bank robbery. Zola has always professed his innocence, and I believe him. He certainly did not receive a fair trial. That's been proven. Anyway, so we've been fighting for him to get work. He did get work at minimum wage in Indiana during this past year, his final year in prison, at $7.50 an hour, which is very little, but it's much more than the 35 cents an hour that he and others normally get paid. So that was positive, but they came up with a second contract they asked Zolo to sign. It was really a horrible contract in terms of the conditions of work, and Zolo refused to sign it. So in many ways right now, he's very frustrated with what the prison system is not offering him for reentry, because the prison system is supposed to have things in place like work and other things. And he's feeling like they're not doing that. So, you know, I think it's hard for him right now. He's facing getting out to a whole world he hasn't been part of for 35 years. The prison system is not doing for him what they should be doing. So that's another aspect to life inside, especially right now.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Let's back up a little bit. You mentioned Zolo's trials, and we've talked about him being a jailhouse lawyer. Let's talk a little bit about his long court battles. I know that he was tried, convicted, and had death penalty sentences overturned twice. Due to systemic racism in the court system and negligent defense lawyers. Can you talk a bit more about his experiences with the court system?
Sure. Well, for the first probably 10 to 15 years, Zolo was really his own legal defender. And he went to work inside prison investigating Indiana law. And he's alive today because he fought his death penalty. And then at another point, wonderful lawyers, Erica Thompson, Michael Deutsch from the People's Law Office here in Chicago, signed on to defend him, and their support, they are fantastic, you know, people's lawyers. And they made a big difference. And then I think the support that we and others have shown him mattered in why he's alive, because, as you say, he was facing the death penalty. Just one other factor on that, and then I will say more about the court proceedings, is, you know, there's a very large anti-death penalty movement in the United States in the last decade, and that, you know, helped Zolo a lot. In 1981, a bank was robbed, and as the robbers were leaving, a police officer in Gary, Indiana, was killed. Quite far away, Zolo was picked up, far away from the bank. He was charged with murder and bank robbery. He was convicted. by an all-white jury of murder and bank robbery. What came out later was that evidence, important evidence, had been hidden by the prosecution and not introduced into the case. The evidence was that Zolo had taken, you know, after he was arrested, they tested him for gunpowder on his hands, and the gunpowder test was inconclusive. But this was hidden during his trial. So that was one of the reasons why several years later, even though the Indiana Supreme Court did not overturn the conviction, they did overturn the death sentence. Now, to me, they should have overturned the conviction because of, you know, serious evidence not being introduced by the prosecution, but they didn't. Then Zola was tried again on the death penalty, and this time it was in front of a jury where 11 of the 12 jurors were white. The 12th juror was not black. In none of his court proceedings, as Zolo, who is a black man, had any black jurors. He was found guilty and sentenced to death again by another jury, again, an all-white jury. But this time it was found that a whole swath of the area around Fort Wayne, Indiana, where Zola was on trial, was not included in the jury pools. And guess what? That was the black part of town. So it was thrown out on that basis for a second time. You know, and throughout his trial, there were problems. When he was on trial back in 1982, the bank robbery was in 81. In 82, he went to trial. Police made a ring around inside the courtroom and around the building. His lawyer was so intimidated, he did not sit at the same table with Zolo. He introduced zero evidence on Zolo's behalf. And that was another reason why the death penalty was thrown out. Witnesses were intimidated and later recanted testimony. Many things, you know, were wrong. But I think because a policeman was killed, there was so much political pressure that the judges didn't reverse the whole thing. So the final thing was that even after being subjected to two death penalty trials, because that's what it is. In Indiana, there's actually a trial on the death penalty, on the sentence. Believe it or not, the prosecutor, Bernard Carter, attempted again to put Zolo to death. And this time, the Indiana Supreme Court allowed it. But a judge decided that, I'm getting things backwards. So after the attempt to kill him for a third time happened, a lower court judge said this should not go forward. There's no way he can get a fair trial, you know, 30 years later. After the incident, witnesses are dead, etc. But the Indiana Supreme Court overturned his decision, and the prosecutor went ahead. Then finally, and you know, we're very happy, and of course Zolo is, that this happened. Another judge, before he went to trial the third time on the death penalty, worked it out with the other side. Especially had to make an arrangement with the family of the slain police officer. So they worked out an agreement where Zola would serve 10 more years, but the death penalty became off the table. So I know that's kind of a long, but you know, this is the kind of thing, I'm sure you know, that many black people, political or not, go through in this country. And the statistics about how many black people and other people of color face the death penalty compared to the number of white people who do, especially white people with money, is just astounding. Mm-hmm. And Zolo's, you know, been fortunate that he was a committed political activist, so his mindset was he's innocent, he's going to fight for himself, and then the support he got. But, you know, many people don't get this kind of support and suffer from a horrible criminal justice system that is that happens in a very similar way to most black people who go to court in the U.S. From, you know, what I described, similar to what I described happened to Zolo.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is the Prison Radio Show on CKUT, and we are currently live on the phone with Howie, who's speaking with us about Zolo Azania, who's a political prisoner and former death row inmate who is set to be released from prison in February 2017. The interview is timely because Zolo's supporters on the outside are running a fundraising campaign. They're trying to raise $10,000 to help Zolo get back on his feet when he gets back out of prison. Howie, on the page for the fundraiser, it also mentions that Zolo has been supported by a team on the outside for the last 13 years. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about this support team and what some of the ups and downs are of supporting someone in prison for over a decade.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. And this is a little bit personal, but in that regard, I want to honor our friend Betty Benson. At age 96, Betty Benson passed away just last year. She had visited Zolo for 10 to 15 years. Betty never drove a car. She'd go from Chicago on the train in the middle of winter. She'd take the train to Gary, Indiana, which is an hour and a half away. She'd, you know, take a bus or walk to the prison. And so Betty and I and four or five other people formed the No Death Penalty for Zolo Committee that started in 2003 when Zolo was still on death row. You know, yeah, it's 13 years later, and we're still supporting him. And, yeah, I can talk a little bit about why and what's been easier, what's been hard. You know, I think the reason we're still at it is, you know, I have a history in the 1960s, civil rights movements, support for the Black Liberation Movement. I'll never forget the 1971 Attica Rebellion, where prisoners took over the prison over their grievances and then were murdered in cold blood when New York State authorities retook the prison. Things like that really had made a big impression on me. And I think all of us in the committee are very concerned of the depth of the issue of racism in our country, and prisons are a big part of that. So that's what keeps us going. And the second thing is Zolo. He's an amazing person. When you visit him, really, you become inspired. His commitment, his spiritual wherewithal. He's a funny guy. He's easy to talk to. He's so easy to support. It's very easy to work out plans with him. So I'd say, you know, that's kind of the reason why and the better stuff. I will be honest, over 13 years, you know, the support on our part, you know, it's gone up and down. There are times when we weren't as consistent as we might have been. But when certain individuals might have personal things or other political activities they were involved in, other members of the group would step up. So all of us as a group, it's been shared responsibility. So someone or two or three people have always been there, writing to him, visiting, doing what was necessary throughout the time. The state of Indiana has tried to put barriers in our way. So, for example, when Zolo was scheduled to have a third trial on the death penalty, it was going to happen in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is like 4 hours away from Chicago. So we were going to have to organize, you know, vans and maybe buses, carpools. And that was tough. You know, there are challenges in doing this work. Yet we were doing it. We're in the process of doing it. That was one of the challenges, though. And then that trial didn't have to take place because of the agreement that was reached that freed Zola from facing the death penalty. You know, some of the other things we've done over the years is we had a really good demonstration in front of the prosecutor's office in Gary, Indiana, Prosecutor Bernard Carter, a reverend from that area, Reverend Doyle, who at that time, this was 2008, at that time was supporting Zolo and visiting him. He came, we handed in letters with 400 signatures from people to, you know, free Zolo from being on death row and facing the death penalty. Well, we're at the office. Oh, and also Indiana State Representative Charlie Brown was there. So we're having our rally, and we're about to go in to go to the office of the prosecutor to hand in the letters with the signatures. Well, the prosecutor comes out, and it was very interesting. So the local media picked up the whole thing. What ensued was a debate between Representative Brown and Reverend Doyle on the one hand against the death penalty and supporting Zolo, and the prosecutor on the other hand explaining why he believed in the death penalty and they were going to go forward with it. But you know, eventually Zolo was freed from facing the death penalty, and I think actions like that that we carried off did certainly matter. So not been easy, but here we are with the gift. Again, not thanks and any thanks to the prison system, but thanks to Zolo's struggles, thanks to his lawyers. I think we played a role as his supporters. We're looking at the gift of Zolo getting out in February, and it's just so exciting after 35 years in prison and 27 years on death row. So, you know, speaking to the folks who are listening to this, you know, especially for us in the U.S., look who was just elected president. I mean, Donald Trump, who espouses misogyny and racism and is anti-immigrant, brags about, you know, that he can touch women wherever he wants, whenever he wants. I mean, this is the person who was just elected president, and I just think that I feel good about the fact that a good part of my life I've contributed to or have devoted to supporting Zolo and fighting white supremacy in this country. And but yes, sure, there have been up and downs, but I think as a committee, when certain people, as I said before, would be a little less available, others would pick up the slack. And so, yeah, I'm very proud that here we are 13 years later still supporting Zolo and welcoming him home in a few months.
So Zolo's getting out in 2.5 months. And let's wrap things up with more information about the fundraiser again. The link to the fundraiser is through GoFundMe.com. It's GoFundMe.com/Zolo/Azania with an S on the end, /reentry/fund/2UADYD84. And I know, Howie, you had mentioned a Facebook page that folks could get the information on. Do you want to repeat the name of the Facebook page that folks could find?
Yes, I will. Organizationally, things have morphed. So previously, we were the No Death Penalty for Zolo Committee. Now that Zolo is not facing the death penalty, I and those of us who've been supporting Zolo are part of a group called, and I'll say it slowly because you can get information on the fundraising campaign at this Facebook page. It's the Facebook page of the Chicago Committee to Free Black Political Prisoners. If you go to that Facebook page, and you scroll down, you'll see a post that shows Zolo's photo, and you'll have access to the GoFundMe page. Chicago Committee to Free Black Political Prisoners. And also, if you just Google Zolo Bazania/ help rebuild. No, I'm sorry. GoFundMe/ help Zolo rebuild his life. And also, as you said, Virginia, sure, that's the link also.
Yeah, and we'll post it on our website for our listeners. And
terrific.
Yeah, and if there's anyone who's going to be in Montreal and able to travel Sunday night, you're welcome to come downtown. We're having an event in support of the Certain Days Political Prisoners Calendar, which is launching their 2017 edition, as well as Diana Block is releasing her book Clandestine Occupations, and we're doing a launch about that. And there will be an opportunity at that fundraiser to give money, which will then be donated to Zolo's release fund. So if you're looking to just give cash and the internet is too complicated, come down. We'll have info about that event at the end of the show, but it's happening Sunday night in downtown Montreal, and you'll be able to give money there.
Oh, that's terrific. Thank you very much. And actually, I just want to put a pitch in for Diana Block and her book. It's a wonderful book. Diana is an old friend. It's a small world because I actually arranged for a book talk for Diana in Chicago, and she's coming here in the spring. She's going to talk at a local bookstore about that book. So that's exciting. But thank you very much collecting money for Zolo and him rebuilding his life at your activity on Sunday night. That's much appreciated.
No problem. And thank you so much for coming on the show, Howie. It's been really nice talking to you.
Yeah, same here. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Howie, who is a supporter in Chicago for Zolo Azania, who is a soon-to-be-released political prisoner and former death row inmate. He is set to be released in February 2017, and folks on the outside are raising money to help him re-enter society after a really long time in prison. You can find out more about Zolo at zoloazania.org. It's ZOLOAZANIA.ORG.
The time is currently 5:37. This is the Prison Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.cqut.ca. This next interview comes to us from folks doing the Prison Radio Show in Kingston. This is an interview they conducted with two women ex-prisoners who are raising money to have a memorial built for women who died in prison. In the interview, Fran and Anne explain the project and the space they would like to see built.
Okay, well, I'll go first. My name's Fran, and the reason I'm here today is to bring awareness to the community and others that might be interested in what our purpose is. And at this point, we've been on this for quite a few years, but we're trying to wrap it up by having a memorial rock or a small piece of land that we can put up in memory of the women that have died while incarcerated. Because due to the fact there is nothing out of respect for them, and I feel regardless there should be something that they don't go unnoticed, or the fact is some of them had sisters, some of them were mothers, daughters. The list just goes on, and I feel the way they died was unacceptable, number one. But number two, I think what's more important is remembering these women that have died.
And my name's Anne, and I'm working with Fran. We met each other in the prison for women 20 years ago, and we were both particularly close with a couple of women in there, and I know myself there's a lot of reasons why I got involved in this memorial fund, but I was very close to a young woman who committed suicide in there. And while we were in there, there was a real sort of a spate of suicides, mainly Native women, over a two-year period. I think there were seven women.
Seven suicides.
Six women were Native and one was a white woman, but... And since we've been out, we see this going on and on. Like, you know, there was Ashley Smith, just here in Ontario, Ashley Smith a few years ago, and just recently a woman named Teresa Baker. But anyways, we just decided that these women should not be forgotten, and that also we wanted to, you know, get a memorial, try at the same time use it as an opportunity to create some awareness around why do so many women kill themselves in prison, and why are there prisons to begin with, and why are women, you know, such a disproportionate number of Native women in prison? But, you know, there's a lot behind these deaths as well.
We have been for quite some time, and what's stalling us is the fact of the money. We're trying to raise the money, and I figure about roughly $5,000 should pretty well cover what we would like to do anyway. So to raise that money, we're coming to the community to help us raise that money. And we're hoping the community has a heart and understands. If it was their family, I think they would want to see their family respect it. You know, or a friend of theirs, I think they would want to know their friend was respected. You know, it doesn't matter what they've done. It's what they are that makes them, and that's a big difference, you know. Half of them that were in there were not in there for life. They weren't murderers. Some of them were doing very short sentences, but that's neither here nor there when it comes down to someone taking their life, actually.
Can you tell me a bit about what you're hoping the memorial will look like and who it's for and what kind of space you're trying to create?
Well, we're really hoping to get permission, because it'd be difficult to do without getting permission, a plot of land by the prison for women. Because obviously in Kingston, that is the most, you know, that's the place where the women in this area have died. What we see it as is like a park, little small park-like setting with some trees, like probably native, like cedar tree and a maple tree, and perhaps a couple of park benches with women's names either burned in or maybe having little brass tags. And we have already a piece of granite, but it'll be a place where you could go and sit. And if, you know, like there are families and friends of these women who we may want to sit there and think about them.
We're not asking for a lot of land. What we're asking for is less than a quarter of an acre of land. So we don't really understand the struggle that we're having to get that. And we feel if we had more support behind us, maybe they would look at things differently and understand what we're trying to do. I do understand that there is, down the road, a guards memorial that I feel it's going to be placed sooner or later. That's in the making now, I believe. But at the same time, we'd like to have a woman's female memorial for the women prisoners. And we're not asking to be put onto the guards' property. All we're asking for is to have it close to the P4W, since that's where this all transpired. And at this present moment, we understand Queens owns that grounds. Owns the land there. So right now it's kind of in a conflict what they're going to do with it. But we're not going to give up. We're going to keep pushing through this until we get a place that we're satisfied, where it won't be disrespectful to the woman. Bottom line is, for whatever reasons, I don't think putting it on CSC property is a very good idea. So we're hoping that they can give us the prison for women, just a little piece of the land there, maybe in the front as you walk up to the building, you know, at least so people can see it and pay their respects to it.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that. No one wants to grieve at the place that's responsible for
keeping
those women.
And I think, like, for me, one of the most important things is that you know, advocating for a memorial, sort of to say, you know, these were bad women, but we should, you know, they were like mothers and sisters, and we shouldn't forget them because nobody cared about them. I'm also looking at it from the perspective that I think people see crime in a way that isn't very accurate. You know, like, I think if you really look at crime, like when we were talking about women that have murdered people, like they say, like I think statistically more than half the women in the prison who murdered someone, it was either their partner or their husband who they had already complained to authority figures about having been abused, and then they killed them. And then when you look at the hugely disproportionate number of Native people, they say that like 28%, It varies depending where you are. 28 to 23% of the prison population is Native women, and yet they're only 4% of the general population. So that obviously shows that there's a lot of racism, because Native people aren't born criminals. Drug addiction, more and more people are starting to realize that it's a mental health issue, not a criminal problem. It's not a crime. It's a mental health issue. You know, I do see a lot of the women in prison when you live with them, with women in prison, that most of the women there are people who have lived in poverty and perhaps been involved in survival through selling drugs or drug addiction. And a lot of the women there, it's like a scapegoats for a lot of the, you know, injustices and inequities.
Rather than put them through a treatment program, which would consist of drugs and alcohol and maybe some abuse setting stuffs, because under every woman's pain that's in the prison for women, I'll say 90% of them have dealt with some type of abuse in their past before they committed their crime, whether it be sexual abuse, whether it be mental abuse, whether it be physical abuse, or whether it be sadistic abuse. You can be rest assured they have suffered through one of them abuses. Mm-hmm. And there are no treatment programs that I personally know of that would help a woman work through that while she is incarcerated. So basically, once she comes out, if she doesn't have work through her stuff, then that stuff's all on her plate still.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's like you take the people in society who are struggling, like they are the victims of the worst aspects of our society, and then the people that are really wealthy and powerful misdirect the public and go, look, these are the people that are the problem. It's these welfare bums that are taking all our money. It's all these drug addicts running around doing B&Es that are causing all kinds of problems with, you know, crime, and that's what we should be afraid of, not the fact that the world, you know, that we're becoming, like we're in a mass extinction period. You know, that the 1% gets something like 90% of all the money that exists and consumes vast amounts of resources too, just through their companies. So that's what bugs me, is how I feel as though it may not be something that people, very wealthy and powerful people, sit down and go, this is what we're going to do. We're going to scapegoat the poor. But it's what inevitably has happened through the centuries, that it's evolved to a point where people in prison are used as the reason for all the ills in society. And when you really go in there, you see that these actually are the people who probably had the brunt of society.
The bottom line, you know, it's not fair now. I don't know if it'll ever be fair. You have multiple women taking their lives behind bars. That right there tells you there's something wrong with that system. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be happening. Them guards are paid there to babysit them. That's their job. And why is this still going on even today, like this year? There's been another suicide. I'm not saying release them. All I'm saying is maybe put some programs in there so they can work through some of their stuff. And the other issue would be, how often do you see women murderers committing another murder after they've served their time? It's very rare. I'm not saying it's never happened. It's just very rare. Like I say, these women that have taken their lives or that have died from drug overdoses, we'll say, were missed by the system, definitely. Like, something is wrong with the system when you have this many going on. To date, I believe we counted up almost 100 deaths that we know of.
Women in prison.
Women. That's women that we know of. And how many years did it go back?
Well, I think until the prison for women opened, but there were women missing, because we know that there are tombstones that they haven't, that were laying under the prison for women that they had never
put out.
These were women whose families probably couldn't afford to pay for their funerals, so right. they bury them up in a place called Pauper's Field.
We think. We're not quite sure where they're buried,
project,
to be honest. That's another mission, but this one's first. To not know where your loved one is, their body is, or their stone is, like, that's very disturbing, you know, for somebody that would care enough to be looking. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a lot of bodies that were not claimed by their families for different reasons. So that opens up another can of worms. Where are these women, and where are their headstones? Where are they laid to rest? Nobody seems to know. We've been asking for the last 10 years and never given a place or an answer. You know, we figured the least we could do from at least out of respect for these women is put up a rock in memory of them. You know, I think we owe them that much.
Can you talk a bit about how people in the community can support the memorial and what people can do to help out?
Well, first of all, I mean, there is a GoFundMe site, and I think it's called
Kingston Women's Prison Memorial. Right now, we're having a bit of trouble with it, so that may not work. But the other alternative is, if you want to donate your cash directly to Elizabeth Fry Society on Charles Street, the phone number is 613-544-1744.
Yeah.
So that is a contact there. And even if you can't support us financially, at least try to support us emotionally. You know, all the help we can get, we would appreciate.
We are working on having an art exhibit, probably after the new year, after Christmas, of women's artwork, if men wanted to donate, to be sold, to raise money for this as well. And I guess what else, the other thing I really wanted to add too, that which we don't want this to appear to be, is a memorial fund for just the women in P4W that have died, because then it leads to this feeling that, well, this is from the past, this archaic prison's being closed, and so is KP, because all the people are now in these modern prisons with treatment and happy days, you know, because realistically, that's what's the most depressing, is that there, it still continues, like the same conditions. You know, women are kept in segregation for years on end. Most of the women end up, if they didn't already have serious mental health issues, anybody would, if they're kept in a seg cell for years. Yeah. So the syndrome of women committing suicide, which is the vast majority of women who die in prison die from suicide. And there's like, so, you know, it's just, it's still as urgent a problem, like prison in general, but women in prison is just as urgent as it was when P4W was open. It's just there's way more now, like way more, like mm-hmm. the percentage of women in prison per capita is much higher now than it was even when in 2000 when they closed P4W.
Mm-hmm.
And so the situation, you know, of just like increasing poverty, increasing racism, and all the factors that create crime obviously are only increasing and becoming worse.
The way I look at it, when they build a new jail, they got to have people in there to fill it. That's a terrible thing to say, mm-hmm. but that's how I feel and think. They're not going to build a new jail for three or four people. And it keeps people employed, so it's quite the system they got.
Great. Were there any final thoughts or anything else you wanted to mention?
Just a shout out to the men, you know. I hope they can find their solace too, you know. But for us, this ain't about the men. It's about the women, because that's our focus right now, is it women. You know, but a shout out to the men behind the walls as well.
That was an interview conducted by folks from the Prison Radio Show in Kingston, Ontario. In it, ex-prisoners Fran and Anne talk about their project to build a memorial to women who have died in prison. Stay tuned here to the Prison Radio Show. We are going to hear Loretta Lynn's Women's Prison.
That's when I shot him down. I caught him in a honky-tonk with a girl I used to know. The door to my cell is open wide, and a voice cries out, oh no. The judge says I'm guilty. My sentence is to die. I know I've been forgiven, but the price of love is high. Strapped me in the chair and covered up my eyes, and the last voice I hear on earth is my mama's cry.
Prison by Loretta Lynn here on the Prison Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM. A couple of public service announcements. You can join members of the Prisoner Correspondence Project tomorrow, Friday, November 11th, noon to 1:30 p.m. for discussion and thought experiment-based workshop, exploring the common tensions, questions, and complexities of engendering prison abolition while working in solidarity with queer and trans prisoners. Midnight Kitchen will be serving a vegan lunch to workshop participants while we chat and learn. The Prisoner Correspondence Project is a solidarity project for LGBTQ2S prisoners across Canada and the U.S., linking them with people who are part of these same communities outside of prison. The workshop will take place here at McGill University in room B29 in the Shatner Building, 3480 Rue McTavish. The building is wheelchair accessible through the south side door, and there are gender-neutral accessible washrooms and elevator access throughout the building. The nearest metro is Peel. It's about two blocks away, but there is extensive construction on Sherbrooke, and so it makes it somewhat more treacherous getting to the building. So for those with mobility issues, it might be easier to enter the Shatner Building from the parking lot on Peel Street. The workshop is in English and will involve participation from the audience, though participation is not obligatory. The workshop is free and open to both students and non-students. If you need any more information, you can contact Midnight Kitchen Collective at gmail.com.
And as we mentioned earlier on the show, there is a double launch happening Sunday night, the 13th of November, at 5:30 p.m. at 1500 de Maisonneuve West on the fourth floor, which is the Center for Gender Advocacy at Concordia's Office on de Maisonneuve. The event is a launch both for